You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, you are officially on the couch, as you always are, with me, your friendly psychologist, Dr. Michelle Cohen. And thank you all for being here. I always appreciate my viewers and listeners and the feedback at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I love to talk about psychological issues, anything going on that I can help you with at certain times. Not only help from my special guests, authors, spiritual people, anybody else who has scientific insight, but I love to talk to people to help you out, like my special guest today. It's the one and only David Cohen. Hi, David. How are you?
Hey, Doc. It's nice. So great. Oh, it's so great to be on the show. Thank you for the invitation. I love, one of my favorite things to do is come on your show when I get the opportunity.
Oh, it's so cool to have you because, I mean, you give a whole view and different picture coming from, I hate to say your generation, but I mean, it's, you know, I don't mean to do that. I mean, you guys are just, you know, next level, I mean, technological wise, and just picking up information and learning, and especially you in terms of your higher spirituality that you adhere to, and also your social media. Let me just introduce you, formally here. David is the founder of The Medicine Fam. They have a reach of over, well, how many do you have now? 340,000 plus. 350,000 plus. He's worked with many experts and influential people in the spiritual healing and insight communities to help others heal and embody their best selves. He's also an ambassador for Gaia. You guys know that. It's offering the largest online resource of conscious expanding videos, enlightening films, yoga, meditation classes, more. And it's awesome to have you as an ambassador representing them as well, because I get so much of my great information from Gaia as well.
It's good stuff. Thank you
for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much. And
I love your posts. I love your posts.
Thanks. Well, I mostly just get information from other people, and when it resonates, it's fun to put out there. So
But you are also not only a provider of information and gatherer and researcher, but you are a practitioner. And I also want to get into that as well, because you do practice what you preach. It's true.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, you had a recent post, and I'm just pulling up. It's about sort of staying in a high frequency. You were talking about a lot of wonderful and helpful tips.
Sure.
And I thought we could talk about, maybe touch on each of the points that it made, which were really cool. I love those.
Awesome.
So so let's talk about what some of these, staying in a higher vibe or higher frequency teachings that you point out really mean, because I think a lot of people can misinterpret some of what they mean.
Sure.
So we'll explain those. We'll just, flesh those out.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
No, go on.
No, you go. You go. Sorry.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, we all know the classic saying, like, oh, it has a good vibe, or, the vibe is weird, or I got a weird vibe from that guy, or whatever, you know.
Right.
And I think, you know, anybody with half a brain could understand that means high vibration, right? Vibe. I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. I mean, anybody could put together that, you know, vibe, vibration. Obviously that comes from, you know, as listeners of your show are probably well aware of. And if they're not, then that's awesome. Then you're definitely tuned into the right show. Everything is vibrational, right? Everything is frequency. Everything is energy. So a high vibe, obviously, what it means is, you know, maintaining, so thoughts have, oscillations. What I mean is like, they can be measured, right? Thoughts can be measured. There's technology This was in the 80s. I forget his name, but this scientist was able to imprint thoughts on quartz crystal, right? So he was able to literally take people's thoughts and imprint it on quartz crystal. Point that I'm getting at is thoughts can be measured. They are tangible things. Thoughts are not tangible in the physical density, but they're tangible in an electromagnetic density, which means that they can be measured, they can be felt, they can be seen with the right technology. Wow. So high vibration, what that means is obviously, you know, thoughts, they have their oscillations. That's the difference between a high vibration and a low vibration. A low vibration thought they're long drawn out. The low frequency oscillation is like, you know, long and slow oscillations, where a high frequency oscillation is like,
if you look at it on a graph, right?
Right. Quickly oscillating up and down, moving fast. So,
The whole point
of high frequency consciousness is practicing the thoughts, practicing the feelings, practicing the techniques, whatever that may be. Everybody has their own style. Everybody has their own preferences, but
sure they do.
Doing what you can to maintain these quick oscillating energy patterns from your consciousness. Wow. And then when we drop into, for example, we start thinking about, something that has a potential outcome,
right?
You know, for maybe it's not exactly what we wanted, or maybe it's something really, really serious that we're dealing with, and we start thinking the worst, and we start thinking, that's where it gets in those lower frequencies, where time literally slows down. You are slowing down your relationship with time. Mm-hmm. You know, So when we don't allow ourselves to maintain high frequency consciousness, we're essentially gridlocking ourselves in these slower time signatures. Space moves slower around us. Time moves slower. We move through time at a slower pace, and it's not even us moving through time. It's our consciousness perceiving.
I hope that kind of
answered your question a little bit.
Yeah, it did. And also in the old school version of, you know, measuring brain frequencies and high frequency thoughts and things like old school, in the early times, you know, I mean, stuff that we probably are not even aware of before I was born, you know, they tested brain waves and exposed people to a lot of vivid imagery. So they would expose people and they'd have all the plugs in there, all of the measuring devices on the EEG or whatever brainwave, you know, that they were measuring at the time. And of course they've become more sophisticated throughout the years.
Of course.
But exposing people to not just the flashes, but exposing people for a while to certain really horrific events or things that would stir up negative thoughts. Very scary things, and then peaceful thoughts, and the brain waves would change actually when they were getting into a beautiful, peaceful visualization of an ocean or a forest, and they kept them on until again they flashed something else and the brain waves would change. So this is a real thing, you know, for people who write in and say, oh, what's all this woo-woo stuff about frequency and, you know, brain, it's brain waves is basically what it is. That's what a frequency is, you know.
Absolutely. And I think the whole with the woo-woo thing, that was like, I really do feel like that was so like 5 years ago, you know. I understand that there's people that are still trying to wrap their heads around it, but the science is there in the same way. Right. So, we'll say, 10 years ago, this wasn't a part of mainstream science. Right. You know, it's now been introduced. I mean, you have people, and I said something similar on the last show that we did together, but you have people like Elon Musk that are coming out and they're openly saying, you know, we are living in a holographic reality. I mean, he says he's come out and said this on a few different interviews and radio shows and stuff. And, you know, what I'm getting at is it the mainstream people that are in that are right in front of your face all the time.
Yes.
Are saying, you know, not just thoughts are vibration and everything is energy, because that's baseline. You know, we know that now, but you know, they're going as far to explain the science behind how we are living in a holographic projection of consciousness and all this stuff. So
I know, and that's really heavy to embrace.
It is, but
that's hard, is it?
No, it is, but it makes so much sense. And it actually, if anything, you know, the first time I kind of wrapped my head around the understanding and kind of accepted the science behind it, was like, you know, this is a real thing. This okay, so let's put it this way. If you are living in a holographic projection of consciousness, right, that means that everything around you is essentially a product of someone else's thoughts, right? So we'll say, for example, and you know, the CIA had these things called HemiSync. HemiSync is this, and you guys can see the playlist on YouTube. This is the actual these are the actual playlists. They were CDs back in the 80s when they were using it, but now it's a playlist on YouTube, and it's what they actually gave these CIA guys. It's a step-by-step on how to impose, essentially manipulate your reality. Sure. By using the understanding of us operating in a holographic projection, but then projecting your thoughts and making it a tangible thing in your reality. So right. What I'm getting at is if we understand it's all holographic, and we understand that it's not this, you know, this, we're not just meat machines with this dense physical, then it makes life a lot easier. You know, it doesn't mean that we have to. And I think a lot of people tend to not even know where to start when they kind of get into this information. But when you understand, you're like, no, this isn't to make more things complex. This isn't to complicate things. This is to make things easier. We don't need to be the brick and mortar, you know, pick it up, move it there, got to push and push and push. It's, you know, go into a, learn to control your thoughts, learn to silence the mind, you know? So.
Well, that's the thing too, that I want to help people with. And you have some great insight on this. In your post, you said, once you can learn to let go of your negative thoughts and fears, you'll experience inner peace and a pervading sense of relief. So psychologically, you know, coming from that point of view, which is, you know, you make a choice, you got to make a choice and be aware, self-aware, because we're, you know, the high beta thoughts are always going, and we have to be self-aware. Oh, that's negative. We have to always be checking those thoughts. I mean, I have people who cannot get the negativity because they were raised in the fear of the unknown.
Sure.
You know, their parents were, maybe I was, but the parents were always like, oh my God, you never know what's going to happen. Or what if, you got to be careful. So you're, you know, hardwired after a while with the what ifs, and you grow up. And so you kind of become self-aware, and you can throw in your addition to these, write these things down to make sure you're aware of being aware, right? Aware of being aware. That's the old Joe Dispenza thing.
Absolutely.
You also, you know, you can draw a line down the middle of a piece of paper and say fears, and then counter arguments. So I'm really, you know, fearful that nukes are going to go off and we're all going to die because of the wars existing and the heightening tensions politically and et cetera. Or you can say, okay, that's happened perhaps, but what is the likelihood of that happening now? Nobody wants to destroy the earth. You know, whatever that would be, whatever the fears are, our little personal fears. So.
Sure. So
cognitive distort. What are we distorting it? Something else that is fascinating to me, and I love how you've really explained this, is stop blaming others for your thoughts, your life, your inner feelings. How can we stop blaming? Business, yeah, it's like, my parents messed me up, or this person was horrible to me, or I was bullied. or someone said something that really hurt me. What are some of your suggestions to help us stop blaming others? What can we think? How can we cure ourselves?
I think it just goes back to who do you want to hold the power? You know, who do you want to have the power over you? If you don't want anybody to have the power over you, then you need to obviously take responsibility for your own emotional responses. Now, I understand that, you know, as a kid, if you were in, you know, an abusive home,
right,
it would be hard to not, you know, hold some sort of responsibility to the adults that did that to you.
Of course.
But at the same time, that's where you go on a deeper level and you say, well, I obviously incarnated here. I have some sort of soul contract with these people. You know, I have some sort of, whether it's, you know, unresolved karma or whatever it might be, I have some sort of contract to work in that, you know, play that role in this person's life and play that role, play that role in the reflection of myself, you know. And then what it really comes back to is, what are you allowing it to teach you? It, once you get out of, once you get out of the blame game,
right,
and you get into practicing responsibility, then what starts happening is the lessons start surfacing.
Right,
you know, it's like the classic, you know, just the most, one of the most classic sayings is like, you know, a lotus only grows from mud, you know, the most beautiful thing, you know, pressure is what makes a diamond. You know, those classic things.
Right, right, right.
It's those. It's the same thing with consciousness, with people. In when you, when you surrender your attachment to thinking that it's anybody else's fault, then you literally take back your power. There's nobody else out there that can, that has the power over your emotional responses, and then. What's cool is, you know, there's this, you know, there's another saying is, you know, the Buddha was like walking one day and this man, you know, started cursing at him and just started essentially going off on him and pointing things out that, you know, he didn't like about the Buddha or whatever. And then the Buddha looks at him and he goes, if you give someone a gift, and they don't accept that gift, who does the gift belong to? And the guy was like, well, me, because I bought it. And if they're not going to take it, then it's going to be mine. And I'm going to sell it or do something with it. And he goes, exactly. And he goes, the same goes for your anger. You know, it's the when you try to if someone's trying to give you something energetically, you know, and to them, they're just giving it to you. They're just saying, take this. They're throwing it on you. But if you don't take it, it only belongs to them. It's only until you know, respond or you react.
Right.
Then, obviously, if that person has the power to alter your frequency, then you've accepted it. Then it's essentially you've contracted to it. You said, okay, you're going to say this about me, then I'm going to take it and I'm going to process it and throw this back to you.
Right.
Then you've just fallen for it. You know, you've taken the bait.
Right.
And it really just comes down to, you know, and that goes as far as abuse or, you know, someone wrongdoing you or someone stealing from you or someone, you know.
Yeah.
I've had the experience of you know, being I've been stolen from and taken advantage of in many situations. So much so to where I had to question, like, what am I doing wrong? You know, I'm
Of course.
And obviously, you know, I held a lot of blame to the people and the circumstances, but it came back to was, you know, I needed these things to make me stronger, to make me wiser, because there were things that it could have been worse later in life if I didn't understand this lesson. And it put me on a trajectory where it brought other really beautiful things in my life, which I was meant to create and experience and do. And I would not have walked that path if those things didn't happen.
Oh, yes. You know, that's beautifully said. And yeah, I guess it's just, what can I get out of this experience, is trying to find lessons and things. And also, you were talking about owning it, or, you know, taking responsibility for your feelings. And I also want to talk about non-attachment and what that really means, but that's something completely different. But that's, just more on focusing thoughts, similar. Yeah. But I was also going to say that besides owning it and saying, okay, I allowed myself to feel these things. It's all here. It's all what we're feeling and how we perceive and everything. And then the next step after that I find it's really important is to forgive ourselves. I think one of the most common things I hear from people in my practice is that they beat themselves up a lot.
Sure.
For, you know, things that they've done just by owning it, taking responsibility for those thoughts, taking responsibility for lashing out, or having the pain within, you know, it's hard to make that transition from, you know, stop beating yourself up. Don't beat yourself up. You know, into love that which you are. And I think a lot of people do that as well.
Right.
I think they really do. By the way, I just wanted to throw this out there again. You're here on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle, and my special guest here, David Cohen. He's the founder of the Medicine Fam with a reach of over 340,000 people. He's worked with so many experts and influential folks in the spiritual healing and self-insight communities. He helps others heal and embody their best selves, and also an ambassador for Gaia, offering the largest online resource of consciousness, expanding videos, enlightening films, yoga, meditation, fascinating interviews, things like that. So enjoy this interview because you're going to hopefully learn a lot today from one of the most spiritual young people I've met. Right?
Thanks,
no,
Doc.
No, it's really true. By the way, how can people get in touch with you if they have questions?
Sure. Just themedicinefam@gmail.com, mm-hmm. or you can check out our Instagram and send us a DM.
Beautiful.
@themedicinefam.
Perfect. All right. So there's another point that you made in your post, and I just want to pull this up. All right. This is about detaching. It says non-attachment is to let go of the thoughts and feelings that create suffering. Okay. So, but wait a minute, I'm a human being and I can't let go of thoughts and feelings. How do I do that? Well, I was reading, and I'm going to throw this out to you. If you go online, you can find this spiritual Buddhist teacher. He goes by Osho.
Sure.
Okay. And he goes by the point of view that says, the non-attachment principle does not mean that you have to be as cold as stone. And I'm quoting him right now. It says, feelings and emotions will still exist even if you decide to free yourself from them. The only difference is how you respond and relate to them. Even those who are famous by being the best spiritual teachers are capable of playing, laughing, smiling, crying. But there are times, though, when they also experience moments of frustration and patience because we're human, right? Yeah. Take any emotion, love, for instance, or grief or whatever, fear and pain from an illness. If you hold back on the emotions, if you don't allow yourself to feel, you'll never get to be detached.
All right? Sure.
So you allow yourself, but also it's not being fearful. You know, so detaching doesn't mean that you can't feel. It means to more be an observer of your feelings. What do you have to say on that particular subject?
Yeah, once again, I think a lot of what we're talking about today just loops back around to like self-empowerment and choosing to hold your power. Yeah. So I think, the whole point of non-attachment is, it doesn't mean don't have an emotional response to the things that are going on around you. But right. What it means is be aware of which role you're playing in the sense of, we'll just put this out here. When something happens, like let's say you're driving and someone flips you off or whatever, you can feel in your heart, you can be like, you can have an emotional response to that, but the moment that you kind of fall into that anger or that frustration, or, when you feel that like, oh, screw that guy or whatever, it's okay. But allow yourself to be like, okay, that's me playing the role of my anger. You know, that's what it is being aware that there's different roles. It's not essentially, right. When you can associate, when you can understand that there's multiple yous, you know, present at all times. What I mean is there's the emotional you, there's the observant you, there's a plane going overhead, if you can hear that, sorry. There's multiple versions of you that you can play in each moment, and you can play them simultaneously. You could feel the emotion, but then take a step back and say, I observe myself feeling this way. And then the moment that you kind of observe, it's not about not having an emotional response. It's about understanding how to work with your emotional responses in a way that's not detrimental to your vibration. Really, it all comes back to what is affecting your vibration, what is affecting your consciousness. Right. And if you can practice taking a step back from being so attached to the emotional response
and more so
just observing,
then
that's what they're referring to.
A lot of people, ask me about that, and also it's just, and I guess the simplistic way of saying that is, please try not to take things so personally. Like you said, you're in your example of, in Los Angeles, it happens all the time.
Sure.
On the freeways and the highways and streets and everything, it's like people flipping you off or cutting. It's like, but that's you carrying your own, inner feeling about yourself. And, it being in a defensive mode. It's like, why are they doing this to me? Other people, it's like, no, take a look at that and question why, you have to do that all the time. Just don't take things, not being oblivious. I mean, you're a human being, like we talked about Osho's, theory, but just say, why am I so sensitive all the time? Ooh, wow, that's something to, do a little deep dive on. Why am I so sensitive? I've been hurt. Okay. And then you follow the chain down to, of course. Yes, of course I am. I'm human. I have these things. But I can't keep pounding myself with the pain and hurting and allowing myself to suffer. I have to take breaks and do things to protect my, as we said, frequency, psyche, and be more loving to myself, right?
Absolutely.
I think those are all important points that we have to make. Something else that you said that I wanted to touch on, and I was just looking through this, and I love this one. And this is something also that I hear a lot, in my practice. It's when you learn to be alone, you say, and not be lonely, then you can be free. Oh, that is such a good thing. Because,
totally.
That's... it's really hard. It's like, what are some of the ways that we can do that? And so being alone is not being lonely, because we can set ourselves free. So how would you respond to that?
A lot of people don't know how to be with themselves.
Yes.
We're constantly surrounded by other people that, once again, it comes back to, people project onto you what you are to them. Can't interact with someone without them already having a relation, whatever relationship you have with anybody, whether it's a friend or a coworker or whatever, you mean something to them. You reflect something to them in one way, shape or another. But that's their perception of you. Even if they're the most loving and caring and understanding and empathetic and open person in the world, they're still going to be essentially, to one degree or another. And it's unspoken. It's just an energetic thing. They're going to be, placing you where you fit in their box, The point is, if you can just disassociate, once again, I think a lot of it is learning this. I keep saying that word, but it is disconnecting. It's detaching. It's not associating yourself with what other people might impose on you. And they don't mean to do it. It's just a natural thing.
Sure.
So when you can detach from these things,
mm-hmm.
spend time by yourself,
mm-hmm.
spend time, really, it's the soul search is a real thing. When you, you know, the best thing to do is go out in nature. Spend a few hours if you can. Spend a night somewhere safe. You know, obviously, don't put yourself in harm's way. But if you can spend the night somewhere in nature, you will get so much information about yourself. You will get so many insights about who you are and what your potential is and what your true joy is in life.
Mm.
You know, and the most difficult thing is breaking the plane is over again. So sorry if you can hear that.
Oh yeah.
the most difficult thing about that is breaking the routine, you know, is saying telling your loved one or significant other, whoever it is, or your kids or whatever, say, you know, I need to take some time for myself to do some searching.
Right.
And that actually is a great thing to do for your children. So they see that there's not this sense of neediness. You know, it's important for kids to be independent, especially when they're young. It's important for them to see examples of independence as well.
Sure.
Otherwise, they're going to get programmed to see that it's everything is reliant. You know, that you need to attach yourself to someone or something to feel whole. And that's far from the truth. We need to enjoy and appreciate and love the people that we are attached to and connected with and we share our lives with. But at the end of the day, we need to be able to take a step back and do what is, you know, most important for us, which is taking care of our relationship with ourselves. Take some time alone. Detach from what other people are saying to you, even if it's from love and from compassion. Just disconnect. Work through that also kind of leads us in. I'm sure you've heard the term before, like shadow work. You know, have you heard that term, Dr. Michelle? Hello?
You're cutting out a bit right there.
Can you hear me?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Uh-huh. Cool. No, I was just saying it could...
You're cutting out a bit there.
No worries. Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay now?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just saying, I'm sure you've heard the term shadow work. Have you heard the term shadow work?
Yes.
So
I have.
Spending time in nature, spending time alone with yourself, allows you to address some of those things that you may have pushed into the shadows of yourself.
Right.
The things that you're trying to escape, the things that you
stimulate
yourself to not think about. There's always some, when you want to stimulate yourself, it's because there's things that you're avoiding.
Right. That makes so much sense. Yes.
Otherwise, you can just sit there in total silence and play with the mind, because that's the biggest playground of all. That's where the true fun happens, when you can really go in and but the stimulation thing, that's why it's hard for people to meditate. It's because there's so much that bubbles to the surface because it's not being addressed or it's not being worked with. But the whole thing with, you know, spending time alone is it allows you to do the self work that you've been running away from. You know, that's why you turn the TV on, or that's why you whatever it is that you do to stimulate yourself or to keep your mind, you know, at bay.
Right.
Let it go. Let it go wild. See what comes up, you know.
Right. That's so true. I love what you're saying. And there's other ways. You know, I was just reading that the latest Gallup poll, sort of after the COVID pandemic is kind of calming down. It's still a thing. It's still in the world. It's still killing people. But the strains have mellowed out a little bit. And people are just saying, oh, I got COVID, another really bad cold, and I feel yucky. And so what I'm saying to you is people are not isolating as much as they were. But during the pandemic and now after, there's sort of like an aftermath of people still fearful you know, of going into too many crowds, things like that. So we've got to realize that, like, the latest Gallup poll said something like, and these are random Gallup polls, you know, but doesn't necessarily mean they're the truth, but 3 out of 5 people interviewed said that they felt loneliness. And I think that has to do a lot with, you know, kind of being isolated, you know, with COVID. People left the workplace, you know, they were all working, which was kind of cool, actually, you know, at home and yeah, that kind of thing. But so anyway, I think you're so right on, you know, about looking at loneliness and being okay with that and not turning to constantly. I get addicted sometimes to TikTok. You know, I'm looking to these quick fixes all the time, and I have my, you know, faves that I look at and stuff. I love animals, so I'll be looking at the animals and playing, you know, I'll go, wait a minute, what am I avoiding? Wait, I want happy things like cute little animals and happy love things going on TikTok, but I have to just pull myself away and go, okay, what are we focusing on now? What are we avoiding? That kind of thing. So, but it's being grateful a lot of times, calling friends, filling my house with music or sound or, you know,
totally
doing something creative. If you're a musician, and I know you are, Davey, I know you've been very musically inclined, or, you know, an artist or any kind of expressive art.
Sure.
Singing, you know, that kind of thing. And spending time with animals, not just looking at them like I do on TikTok. Spending real time, you know, getting an animal for your house, or if you can't, volunteering somewhere. Do something you really care about. You know, all of those things that make you feel nurtured. And people do, and studies show that if we are with others, we do feel nurtured. But right. Sometimes we can even feel lonely in a large crowd.
Sure.
Had a couple of people tell me that they've gone to concerts or gone to gatherings or whatever. Not so much meditative or spiritual or sound healing gatherings, but more like mass, you know, like games, you know,
sure.
Here at, you know, the centers that are so big. They feel lonely if they're alone.
Sure.
And there's thousands of people around them. So it's just being okay with feeling better. With right. Who you are and feeling your own heart with you're fine and being alone, being
and,
quiet.
And and I think once again, a lot of that goes, it's not about, you know, it's about being able to be alone without feeling lonely. You know, that's the thing it's not about what can I do to temporarily, you know, make myself, occupied, but it's more of like, Let me face the things that I'm running away from. And when you do that, you're not going to feel alone, or you're not going to feel lonely. You can be alone. You can be, you know, granted, that doesn't mean to be alone, you know, all the time. Sure. Right. You're going to get lonely.
Right.
But if you can essentially, you know, step into your power by once again, facing the things that you traditionally don't want to face,
right.
Go through it, do the work, see what comes up. And, you know, eventually you do get to a place in your mind where you don't feel that loneliness, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're never really alone. And that's,
right.
I guess that's a topic
right.
for another show, but,
right.
but
right.
when you can access these places, you'll realize that there's wonders that are waiting for you in the, you know, in the silence of your mind. And so
no, and besides, like you said, beautiful in terms of your mind and managing that and, you know, overcoming loneliness, negative thoughts, things like that. There are also physiological things that I know, like I said, you not only suggest it and talk about it and help others, but you also are a practitioner of these things. So I know that you release your endorphins daily. you're an endorphin releaser. How do you do some of those physical things? What is up with that with you?
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite things to do is run. I just enjoy running.
Yeah. Run, Forrest, run. Yeah.
That's right. And, you know, if you can, if you have the willpower to put on a YouTube video and do a yoga thing, then do that. Otherwise, try and get yourself to a yoga studio. Sometimes it's hard to do, you know, things in your house alone or, you know, if there's other stimulation going on. But yeah, I mean, just the basic, you know, any form, really any form of exercise, you know, it's so important. I saw this study, it was done. It said that if you essentially exercising releases, and I'm butchering it, but what it was saying is exercising releases chemicals.
The endorphins, of course,
sure, but along with the endorphins, it does other things.
It helps.
Where it reverses age. It will literally keep you young. It will keep you vibrant. And it gives you, it said something like, if you're in your 50s and you're exercising, you exercise every day for X amount of time, you know, it brings your neuroplasticity down to when you were like in your 30s, right?
Right.
And
absolutely.
Same thing goes for if you're in your 30s and you want to, you know, get back to how you were when you were 20 or whatever, you know, with obviously with holding on to those same lessons that you've learned, not literally reverting back, but reverting back to that plasticity, you know, that ability to think more freely and candidly, and you know what I mean? So
yeah, exactly.
Exercise is huge.
Physicality is, and it's, you know, not only like we talked about, of course, it's whatever your doctor says, you know, if you have heart issues or whatever, but get that heart pumping, get that heart rate up, and it does clean out and release endorphins, and it does encourage serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine, all of those neurotransmitters we need to stay pretty mentally stable.
And you know what else is really powerful? And I'm sure that there's people out there that would disagree with me, but that's okay. There's science on it. Go for it. Is fasting. Giving yourself a 3-day water or 3-day liquid fast. If you can fast for 3 days, your body starts, when your body doesn't have any food to burn, it starts burning and using the toxins that are still in your cells that are in your body. It starts burning these toxins. And that also kind of goes into your body burning the ketones and stuff like that. But it's when you can not eat, especially meat or cheese, anything dairy and poultry, anything like that. If you don't eat anything, just do a fast for 3 days.
Right.
You will, there's a whole other level of endorphins that come with that and clarity. Sure, just like anything, it's going to be difficult. There's going to be these moments of, you know, wanting to give in, just like when you're on a run or you're doing a workout, you want to give in. But if you could just push past it, give yourself 3 days now. I'm sure that there's, you know, whatever medical conditions could prevent that. But aside from that, if you can, and not even the medical, look at Dr. Sebi. Just look up Dr. Sebi's whole thing. He had diabetes. He had all these health issues. And the one thing that he did a 90-day fast.
Wait a minute. They say, according to the producers of Naked and Afraid, they say the human being can, you know, exist on 21 days of no food. That's why they make the challenges last 21 days. But they can only go for 3 days without
Water. Not when you're giving yourself, not when you're supplementing with herbs. And, it's a liquid fast.
Not even nutrients.
But not even juices and stuff. Just these herbs. These just herbs. Using these herbs that contain and sea moss. Using like sea moss and herbs. He did it for 90 days, and he, after the 90-day period, he saw this medicine man in Mexico. He met this medicine man in Mexico. He had traveled to all these different continents around the world looking for a cure, because essentially, you know, the Western doctors gave him a certain amount of time and said, well, you got to do this, you got to do this. And he didn't believe that. He goes, no, there's way more to
right.
So he went to Mexico and he met this medicine man in Mexico. And he gave him a series of herbs and told him to do this 90-day fast. And by the end of the 90 days, his health was perfect. It was. He got rid of his diabetes. He got rid of it. And look it up. I mean,
and what's his name again?
Dr. Sebi, S-E-B-I.
Okay, yeah. I'll check him out.
It's a real thing. He's very well known in the conscious community. And he was making such strides he helped thousands of people cure cancers and all these different ailments.
A lot of the foods, pesticides, the unhealthy water we drink, things like that. And like you said, herbs and nutrients, you still get your nutrients from those things as well.
Right. And the body has, we're programmed from a very young age that you need breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you need this, and you need that's not true. It's not true.
Right. The newest thing is intermittent fasting, right? I mean, a lot of people I talk to are doing, well, don't eat for 12 hours. Don't wake up and have, you know, who are trying to lose weight or cleanse, you know, really keep yourself well hydrated.
Absolutely.
Let's say you eat a meal at 7 p.m., 8 p.m., 9 p.m. at, you know, dinner, supper, whatever you call it. Then they say they go 12, 13, 14, 15 hours to let their body metabolize, to get rid of the waste products, continue to hydrate, and then, you know, and then eat small portions a couple of times a day.
If you in the 60s, 70s, 80s, if you were to tell, you know, if you were to say, hey, I'm fasting, your mom would say, no, you need to eat this. And, you know, it was just a thing. It was a program.
We're rewriting
the programs and we are understanding that the body does not need to consume nearly as much as we've been told.
And it's really true.
And I mean, think about it. Really consumption creates waste. And the waste that you release, you know, that's a large portion of it.
Right.
But there's more that gets stored in the cells and all that. So
it's really true. Well, listen, we have about a minute left, so I want to make sure viewers and listeners can check you out. What's the best way that folks can get in touch with you and find more out about the Medicine Fam?
Sure. Well, yeah, just you can check us out on Instagram and Facebook, The Medicine Fam, at The Medicine Fam. And I guess we've decided to work on getting a TikTok, so we'll eventually get that going.
Of course. And Your Instagram is brilliant, too.
Thank you. But and then just themedicinefam@gmail.com.
Okay.
Or our website at themedicinefam.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being a guest on my couch today. You're always the best. And you always have new, fresh, enlightening ideas for my viewers and listeners. And I always get positive responses when you come on the show. So thank you.
Thank you, Doc. You're the best. I love you very much.
I love you more than anything in the world. All right.
Thank you.
All right, sweetheart. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening here on the couch. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen. And as I always say, please take care of yourself first. Go within, eat well, take care of your body, and then you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works. See you next week. Bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle. Right here on LA Talk Radio.